to be stared at with eyes so blazingly blue. I wasn't used to a look from Connor having that much impact. But before I could think too much about it, magic began to beat like a drum, like the warning of an army miles away. Except the pounding was in my chest, and it was growing louder. The monster was reaching out again, and I understood immediately why it had awakened, why it had stretched. This time, it wasn't for the city, but for the blade. For my mother's katana. She stood across the room in a dark suit, a white shirt beneath, her crimson scabbard belted to her waist. I hadn't even considered that my mother would bring the sword here tonight. But of course she would. She'd be acting as host, along with my father. And as sentinel, on behalf of his house. My heart began to hammer in my chest. Not in fear, but in anticipation. In dread. Her sword held the egregore, the creature Sorcha had cobbled together from alchemy and the cast-off emotions of Chicago's citizens. When Sorcha manifested the creature into a dragon, my mother had the responsibility of bringing it down. Mallory had created the spell to bind the egregore to my mother's sword, to confine the magic again. But the spell worked better than anyone had intended. It bound me to my mother, and that wasn't the only thing. I didn't know the monster existed until I'd become a teenager, until I was old enough to feel magic, to recognize the urge that was coming from inside me. I'd feared I was crazy, until the first time I'd walked into the house's armory. I'd gone in with the other subs homeschooled at Cadogan to learn about weaponry, and the pounding had begun the second the armory door had been opened. Her sword had spent most of the past 20 years hanging there, in part because of what it held, in part because she didn't carry it anymore. Chicago had been mostly peaceful, at least as far as subs were concerned. She'd taken a hiatus as sentinel while I was young, and vampires had agreed not to carry visible weapons in public. I'd moved toward the katana, and I'd felt the pull down to my bones. That was the first time I realized that I wasn't crazy, that the monster was something other. I didn't know then or now exactly what it was, some fragment of the egregore, or some new thing created by the binding magic, only that it yearned to be free from me, to be united with the magic in the sword. And because I wouldn't let that happen, it was furious. That's why my anger often awakened the monster, because it understood the feeling. I'd made my mother and Lulu's tell me the story of the dragon over and over again, trying to ferret out some detail that would confirm whether I was right. I hadn't found that detail, and I still didn't know for sure. And I couldn't tell either one of them. Couldn't bring myself to confess that Mallory's magic had hurt me and made me hurt others. No one else, I promised. I was responsible for its behavior, and I would damn well be responsible. Pushing through the mental haze of magic, I moved through the room to the double doors on the other end, slipped into the women's lounge. There were two walls of mirrored counters and stools, and no women in sight. I moved to the closest mirror. My irises had shifted from green to silver, as happened to all vampires when their emotions were high. But along the edge, like the corona of an eclipsed star, was a thin line of gleaming crimson growing wider with each heartbeat. If I didn't take control, the red would bleed farther until my eyes gleamed like rubies. And there'd be no hiding that. I was jet-lagged and tired, and the monster had sensed the weakness. So I made myself focus, made myself bear down against it. I closed my eyes, slowed my breathing again, and counted to 100, and then again, until I could feel it recede. When I opened my eyes, they were green again. They were going to stay that way. After the usual introductions and well-wishing, the first session of talks began with the airing of grievances, like an obscene vampire festivus. The European masters were allotted 4 minutes apiece to introduce themselves and their house, and identify their singular goal for the discussions. Some spoke of peace, but most, being old and powerful vampires, spoke of power and recognition. They wanted to be part of the new order, whatever that might be.
"We were excluded from the Greenwich Presidium,"
the master of the only Sicilian house said through his translator.
"We demand a voice in the new regime."
The demand set off murmurs and whispers and a few outright rebuttals.
"Your house is the newest," said one of the German delegates. "The houses with longer tenures should have more power."
Delegates. My father pushed power into the word, and although it took a moment for the sound to spiral into silence, it was the only word he'd need to speak.
"I would remind you that we are here to explore peace. We are here to speak our respective truths and listen to the truths of our neighbors. Respect is elemental, crucial, and mandatory."
He turned his intense emerald gaze on every vampire in the audience.
"If we do not start from that common thread, there can be little hope of progress."
There were more mumbles in the crowd, and his eyes went hard and cold. My father was a loving and patient man, but he did not tolerate idiocy.
"To those of you who believe progress is less important than your own self-interest, let me remind you what happened to the Greenwich Presidium. Self-interest does not serve the long-term interests of any house. Either you work together, as we have done in Chicago, or you fall together. And if you fall together, you will lose allies. You will lose coffers. You will lose reputation, and you will lose lives."
He let those words echo through the room, and when silence settled again, he nodded. My father had power and respect, and those words were likely enough for every vampire in the room. But they weren't enough for the intruders. I heard them before I saw them, the whistle that cut through the air. And then they swarmed into the ballroom, an army on the attack. Fairies. No longer in tunics, but black fatigues. Their hair, long and dark and severe, pulled back over sharp cheekbones and wide eyes. As vampires rose to object and guards stepped forward with katanas drawn, they made a river of black around the edges of the room, a barrier between the vampires and the rest of the world. My first thought was for the guards, vampire and human, who'd been engaged to protect the floor below. They'd been prepared for violence, could have combated it. I hoped they'd succumbed only to magic and hadn't lost their lives to the supernatural ego. With the vampires contained, this particular supernatural ego stepped inside. Her hair was down, waving locks that spilled across her shoulders. Her dress was white and gauzy, carefully embroidered with thread that glinted gold in the chandelier light. And in her eyes was fury that flamed as brightly as her hair, her magic sending the scent of salt spray and fresh grass into the air. Ruadan stepped into the room behind her, also in his finery. Not a soldier, but a king. Or as close as he seemed likely to get with Claudia in power. Some of the delegates looked afraid or confused. Others looked amused, as if this were part of some elaborate entertainment prepared for their benefit. Chicago's masters rose from their seats. They knew better. My parents both looked back at me, the instinct to protect their child. I nodded, tapped the handle of my sword to signal I was fine, and was glad they couldn't hear the pounding of my heart. My fear didn't matter. Neither looked entirely convinced I was safe, but then again, none of us were at the moment, so they gave their attention back to the threat. My father shifted his gaze to Claudia as the other vampires looked at him, still trying to figure out what was happening and what they should be doing about it.
"Claudia," he said,
and in that word was an angry punch of power that rippled through the room like a wave. My heart pounded with concern for him, for the risk he was taking, even though I knew he and my mother could handle themselves. I'd never seen them face down an army before. Those days had been gone before I was born, and I didn't enjoy it now. But there was something more dangerous yet. With each drip of adrenaline into my bloodstream, magic began to drum again, eager to join in the fight.
"Bloodletter."
Her voice was hard, the word and tone an insult.
"We are here to demand an end to this disrespect."
My father's expression showed no fear. He would show no deference to her.
"What disrespect have you been shown?"
He glanced around at the delegates, some of whom were showing their fangs, their eyes silvered with emotion.
"How is a discussion about peace among vampires a threat to you?"
Lips curled, she looked around the room.
"You gather your allies here to discuss revolution, to discuss that which bloodletters seek as much as they seek blood. Power over others."
She offered Ruidon a knowing smile, and he nodded back, eyes narrowed with satisfaction. My father lifted an eyebrow.
"That is incorrect. We are here to lay the foundation to end violence among the houses of Europe, to discuss the peace we've found, or had found, in Chicago. Peace that you appear to be breaching, Claudia."
Claudia was either too egotistical to care that she'd angered him, or oblivious to it.
"Then why were we invited to your party, but not to these serious discussions? It is insulting. And does it not prove you seek to hide your purpose from those who would bring it into light?" "As the invitation explained," my father said, voice flat, "the reception was to celebrate our peace. The discussions pertain to European houses, and, as far as I'm aware, fairies have no quarrel with the houses in Europe. Do I misunderstand? Do you have grievances to air against Dumas? Against Solignac?"
For a moment, Claudia looked unsettled, and maybe a little confused by the question.
"You are planning revolution," she said,
her words as uncertain as her expression.
"We are not. If you have been informed otherwise, you have been misled."
"Wait."
A vampire from Catalonia stood, a man with short, dark hair, tan skin, and suspicious eyes.
"There is something suspicious here. Shapeshifters in a room of vampires. If these discussions do not pertain to other species, why are they here?"
"Because they volunteered to provide security for this endeavor," my father said. "And I'd note they are showing substantially more grace than you about that fact."
This must have been Tomas Cordona, the master of Casa Cordona. His house was one of the most conservative on the political spectrum, and generally believed sups shouldn't mix. The reception and shifter's presence was probably a challenge to that nonsense, which was likely one of the reasons the Chicago houses had arranged it that way. Tomas shook his head, pointed at my father.
"Deny that you've sought to strengthen your position, to consolidate the power of the vampires in this city, or that you're content to share power with shapeshifters."
He leveled a menacing gaze at Gabriel.
"We do not believe in such things."
Gabriel's expression was cool and unruffled, There was no insult there, at least not that I could see, but a mild disdain that he'd probably showed to vampires before.
Tomas, you are insulting your hosts, Marion said, disapproval clear in her eyes. That is not befitting a vampire.
Tomas snorted.
You are plainly on the side of Cadogan, because you shelter his master's child.
He fixed his gaze on me, which lit a fire in my father's eyes.
I would warn you, Tomas, to leave my family out of your raging. You were invited here today to seek peace. If you will act like a child, we would be happy to treat you like one.
He looked around the room, magic lifting in the air.
There is no conspiracy. There is no revolution. There is no attempt to consolidate power. There is only an effort to help our brothers and sisters in Europe find a way to peace.
Silence fell and magic kindled, breaths bated for his next move. My father looked at Claudia.
These talks do not pertain to the activities of fairies in Europe, nor to any supernaturals in Chicago. But if you wish to observe, to offer your expertise, it would be rude and injudicious of us to decline it. You may, if you wish, join us tonight as our guests.
I bit back a smile. My father was very good. Make the fairies an offer they couldn't decline without losing face, and one the vampires in the room couldn't complain about without looking foolish and ungracious.
We will join you, Claudia said, chin lifted, and we will see what trouble you seek.
Two chairs were located and placed in the empty gap in the outer ring of chairs, while my father sent vampires to check on the guards the fairies had managed to get past. The chairs weren't fancy, armchairs probably borrowed from one of the hotel rooms, but Claudia and Ruadan seated themselves like royalty, her hand over his atop the rolled arm of her seat. Unfortunately, the fairy's seating was the only problem solved during the first abbreviated night of talks. While most of the vampires agreed some kind of governing body was necessary, they couldn't agree on how that body would be formed, or how voting rights would be allocated. The oldest houses argued they were the wisest, the most experienced, so their votes should carry more weight. Newer houses with more money argued they had more value to society, so their votes should carry more weight. And everyone in between feared being swallowed by the larger fish. Blood and food were offered an hour into the meeting. The fairies remained in their chairs, and well guarded, while the vampires partook. But the refreshment didn't make the second half of the session any more productive. They'd barely gotten discussions started again when the houses derailed them by arguing about how they'd contribute to paying the council's expenses when they were in session and where they'd meet. The European vampires faced some of the same questions America's founders had faced more than 200 years ago, except that the vampires had centuries more ego and arrogance behind them. We adjourned with little accomplished beyond identifying the real problem. How to get dozens of vampire houses to sacrifice in order to come up with a plan that benefited them all. The fairies were escorted out first, and the room itself seemed to exhale with relief when they were gone. The shifters also disappeared quickly, and I couldn't blame them. They hadn't exactly gotten a warm welcome from the European houses. I spoke with Marion, agreed to talk to my parents about the path forward while she returned to the hotel, where the odds of a fairy attack seemed lower. And then I walked into the plush antechamber beside the ballroom to wait for their arrival. I was checking the news on my screen when the door opened and my parents came in, followed by Theo and a tall, lean man with medium brown skin, dark hair, and dark, somber eyes.
Elisa, my father said, this is Roger Yoon, the associate ombudsman.
We shook hands.
It is good to meet you, Elisa. Your grandfather is a good man.
We think so, I agreed, then looked at my parents. How are the guards?
Magicked,
he said, and ran a hand through his hair.
We hadn't even considered the possibility magic, other than glamour, would be used as a weapon.
Glamour was the vampire's innate magic, the ability to lure humans and lower their inhibitions when it suited our purposes.
So many hours of work,
my father said, sounding uncharacteristically dejected.
With very little to show for it. It was unlikely the first round would result in a treaty,
Yoon said kindly.
Perhaps now that the bad blood has been aired, so to speak, the real negotiations can begin.
And we did avoid an apparent fairy revolution, my mother said, perching on the arm of my father's chair.
That's twice in 2 days we've seen Claudia in her finery. I could have done without the second,
my father said, and looked at Yoon.
Thoughts? She wants to be seen as powerful,
Yoon said.
In control, and an important part of the city's leadership. Quite a change from their previous attitude,
my father said dryly. Why would the fairies believe the talks were some kind of conspiracy? I wondered. Claudia is unstable, my mother said. She has been for a very long time.
But why the sudden interruption?
Yoon asked.
There hasn't been a gathering of vampires this large in many, many years,
my father said.
Perhaps the fairies saw it as a threat.
My mother frowned. But why not say something during the planning phase, or attack during the reception, or attempt to prevent the meeting in the first place? My father nodded.
The fairies have always been self-centered, but this was unusually specific, like they'd only figured out our villainous plan tonight. Perhaps the scale of the issue was larger,
Yoon said.
Their magic is fading again.
He glanced at me.
You know about Sorcha, the egregore?
The word thrummed through me like a plucked string on a cello.
I know,
I managed, squeezing the words through tight lungs.
2 decades have passed since magic was spilled over the city,
Yoon said,
and it is largely dispersed. Chicago is nearly at level again, from a magical standpoint. Concern that they'll fade away again may have triggered their sudden interest, and the fear they'll be pushed aside by vampires.
What about Ruidan? I asked.
We don't know much about him, Yoon said. From what we understand, he's 22 or 23, born after Sorcha's attack. There were several dozen fairies born in that time frame, and we believe this was the first time fairies conceived children in the United States.
How old is Claudia? I asked, thinking of Ruidan's interest in her, romantic or otherwise.
Older than me,
my father said with a glint in his eye, reminding me that he had been nearly 400 and my mother 28 when they'd gotten together. I didn't want to think too closely about that. She looked older tonight than I'd seen her before, I said, worn around the edges.
I thought so too,
my mother agreed. Not by a lot, but noticeably. Yoon looked at my father.
What is next, do you think?
My father rubbed his temples.
I don't know. They seemed satisfied by what we offered today, and that was little enough. If they believe we're engaged in some sort of fanged conspiracy, I don't know what we could really do to appease them. They'll want seats again tomorrow,
Yoon said, and my father rolled his eyes.
I'm sure you're right. I'm inclined to let them in again to maintain the peace, but that's not helping the negotiations. And tonight?
Yoon asked. I'd nearly forgotten. Cadogan House was hosting a party for the delegates. It would be fancy, since that was my father's style. And there would be food and music, since that was my mother's. Question was, would there also be violence? We could cancel, my mother said, glancing at my father, but he shook his head.
We won't be cowed by violence, threatened or perceived. That wouldn't serve Chicago or the purposes of these talks. We'll increase security, and make everyone aware that the fairies aren't above using magic to get their way.
He looked at Yoon.
I'll be communicating with Kelly and the rest of my team as soon as we leave here.
Kelly was the head of Cadogan's guards. Yoon nodded.
Very well. Then I'll leave you to your preparations and get a report to Dearborn. He's going to be angry, my father said, but looked more amused by the possibility than disturbed. He won't care that his promotional opportunity has gone south.
Yoon smiled.
We know who did the actual work in arranging this particular opportunity. But if the result is good, he won't care much about the details of how that came to be.
My father smiled, appreciating his dry tone.
You have a solid sense of him. I am well aware that part of my job is managing Dearborn's expectations, Yoon said. And for all our sakes, I hope the result is good.
6. We had 3 hours until the Cadogan party, and I wasn't needed until it was time to escort the French delegation to my parents' house in Hyde Park. I was trying not to think of the magic that awaited me, so I confirmed Lulu was still where she said she'd be, and took an auto to Ukrainian Village, the neighborhood on the west side where Slavs, Poles, and then Ukrainians had settled, had a lot of townhouses, plenty of dives, and several gorgeous churches. It was also home to Little Red, the PAC's Chicago headquarters. When the auto stopped, I found nothing left of the bar I'd seen 4 years ago. The scrubby little brick building that had squatted on the corner, a plate glass window in front so the PAC could keep an eye on the street. It had been replaced by a 3-story building marked by horizontal stripes of steel and tinted glass. It hadn't occurred to me to ask Lulu if the PAC had moved, relocated to some other part of the city. The change was disorienting, and I turned a circle on the sidewalk to get my bearings, and caught the scent of roasting meat in the air. Curious, I looked back at the new building, caught the tiny red inscription in the front door, also metal. NAC Industries. I guess they upgraded, I said, and walked to the door and pulled it open. The smell was even stronger here. Sweet and sharp and smoky, with a spicy kick. And behind it, the faint smell of fur and animal, and the vibration of powerful magic.
Close door. You are letting out air.
The voice was rough, but 100% recognizable. She rolled up to me in a red motorized scooter. Her hair was still dyed blonde, her body a sturdy box on stick legs, her face lined with a few more wrinkles. But her eyes were still clear and suspicious, and her magic put a spice in the air that nearly overpowered the scent of food. Her gaze narrowed.
You look familiar. I remember a little girl who came in here with her parents. Brat, she added with a sly smile. And then a young woman. And then poof, gone.
Hello, Berna. It's been a long time. Berna was one of the matriarchs of the NAC pack, and Connor's great aunt. Her particular corner of the pack was from the Ukraine. She clucked her tongue.
For years you have not come by.
I was out of the country.
You have not seen our new building.
I didn't even recognize it. It's so... I looked up at the glass and steel atrium, and the mobile of metal parts that swung above our heads. different.
Modern,
she said, lip curled like the word itself tasted sour.
It's not my style, but humans, they like.
Her eyes narrowed, and her smile went sly as a fox's.
And they spend money.
So I see. Smells like the barbecue business is doing well.
Not just barbecue.
Before I could ask what she meant, she zipped her scooter around and headed down a hallway. Deciding I'd better follow or be left behind, I hurried to catch up. The floor here was shiny concrete, and the smell of fresh paint still tinted the air. But it wasn't strong enough to beat back the scent of food, and I hoped some of it was destined for the Cadogan House party.
The kitchen, she said, pointing to a door. Restaurant over there. Bar over there.
Over there was behind what I thought was the same tufted red leather door that had hung at the old bar.
It's still the Pax place. For now, she added,
her tone and narrowed eyes adding an ominous edge. For now?
Pack has been in Chicago for a long time. We are not as strong when we do not recharge. Some of us will return, be part of the woods and the air and the water, join with the earth, and we will be stronger again.
Only some of you?
We have business here, she said. Industry. Many have started families, live as humans. But the pack must be strong. So there must be a reconnection, a rekindling. That magic will be shared among us, and we will be whole again.
Then I hope the pack finds what it needs, I said with a smile. I'm here to see Lulu, I added, before I ended up on another leg of the tour.
She's in back, working.
Her gaze narrowed again.
You will interrupt her?
No, I will just say hello. There was an aching silence when Berna probably evaluated whether I was going to cost the pack time or money. Then she nodded toward the far door.
Through there. She is working on the wall.
I left before she could change her mind. I always forgot how small she was. Lulu Bell was just over 5 feet tall, with a slender build and a thick bob of dark hair that scooped at an angle around her face, and that she was forever flipping out of the way. She wore a sleeveless top in dark gray over calf-length leggings, and flats with toes so pointy they could probably be used as weapons. She stood in front of an enormous wall, 20 feet long and at least 15 feet high. Half the wall was filled in, streaks of wild color dancing around curvy female shapes. The other half was still what I thought was the base coat of paint, where light pencil marks created shapes that hadn't yet been filled in with color. With a yellow pencil, she drew another waving line across the unpainted portion of the wall.
Thanks, but I don't need any more coffee, Berna, she said without looking back.
Good, I said, because I didn't bring any. Lulu glanced back, hair falling over her right eye. Her skin was pale, her eyes pale green in a heart-shaped face. Her lips were a perfect Cupid's bow, and there was stubbornness in the set of her chin. For a second, she just stared at me, as if trying to reconcile the fact that I wasn't Berna. And then her scream cut through the air like a knife. She dropped the pencil, ran toward me, and jumped into my arms.
Please, you're here, she said,
wrapping her legs around my waist like a toddler. I put my arms beneath her and tried to keep both of us upright.
You might be tiny, I grunted, but you're way too heavy for this.
Even this close, I couldn't detect a hint of the magic I knew she carried as the daughter of two powerful sorcerers. Her parents had embraced their magic. Lulu was a teetotaler. I wondered if the apparent absence of it meant she'd lost her skill completely, Or she'd just gotten better at hiding it.
You're a vampire. You can handle it. She pressed a kiss to my cheek, then unfolded her legs and hit the ground again. Let me look at you.
Before I could argue, she took a step back, gave me an up-and-down appraisal.
Your hair's long.
She'd come to Paris to see me a couple of years ago, but our communications had been mostly electronic since then.
Yeah, it's better that way. So much. You trying for the Sabrina thing?
She asked with a grin.
The one with Audrey Hepburn, full of newfound sexiness and charm?
I gave her an arched eyebrow worthy of my father.
You're saying I wasn't sexy or charming before? You didn't believe you were sexy, and you can't convince anyone else of something you don't believe.
You're really good at backhanded compliments. She patted my cheek.
Honesty is an undervalued commodity in this day and age, Lise. If people were a little more honest, the world would turn a hell of a lot smoother.
I didn't think this was the time to bring up her hidden magic, so I kept my mouth shut.
Anyway, it looks like Paris did you some good, and I'm glad to see you.
I'm glad to see you, too. Then she held out a hand. I looked down at it, then up at her. What?
Where's my souvenir?
Damn it. I should have gone with the airport macaron. Still in Paris? She made a noise of exaggerated frustration.
You owe me a drink for that.
She pointed at me with a paint-smeared finger.
And Colcannon.
Lulu had discovered Colcannon at Temple Bar, the official Cadogan House watering hole. It also served Irish pub food, including the mashed potato-cabbage combination I didn't understand. My lip curled involuntarily.
Colcannon is disgusting, and I'm not buying it. But I'll buy you a Guinness. Deal.
This looks amazing, I said, hoping to change the subject from cabbage, and gestured at the mural. She walked closer, flicked at a smudge.
It's not bad. Still a lot of work to go, but it's not bad. You want to help?
You know I can't draw my way out of a paper bag.
I know. I was kidding. I love you, but I don't want you touching this.
I took a step closer, tilted my head at the four women, whose skin tones ranged from milky white to dark brown. Their limbs, some bent and some outstretched, flowed together like they were reaching for each other.
What's the story?
Lulu picked up the discarded pencil.
What do you think it is?
Analyzing art wasn't my thing, but I stepped up, took a swing, and gestured to the woman on the far left. Maybe something about women sharing their knowledge, their experiences? I pointed to a swath of golden paint. And how that helps them grow, enriches their communities. She grinned.
That's not bad, Sullivan. Dead wrong, but not bad.
I was more disappointed than I should have been.
Then what is it?
She lifted a shoulder.
Sexy hotness. The pack wanted naked ladies, so I gave them naked ladies. Gorgeous, curvy, mostly naked ladies in a rainbow of shades and textures, and not a nipple in sight.
Because a woman has to draw a damn line.
Damn straight, she said, and made a small adjustment to one of the new lines. They argued about this building, the plans, the design for nearly a year before they finally broke ground. Ended up having to build the bar first, the rest of the building over it. It was a whole thing.
Drama or not, it turned out pretty well.
Yeah, it did.
Lip between her teeth, she made another adjustment.
How was the shindig?
The reception was weird, I said, thinking of Ruadon. I took some video to show Sari. We can watch it when you have time. The talks were a mess. The fairies interrupted, and it was a whole thing. She glanced back.
The fairies? Interesting. They threw a fit about not being included, and then they were included, and vampires were still vampires. So, arrogance and arguing? Pretty much. How's the family? I asked carefully. Lulu's mother, Mallory, had taken an evil turn before we'd been born. She'd gotten addicted to dark magic and wreaked her own havoc on Chicago. If my parents were seen as the saviors of Chicago, Lulu's mom was the sorceress who tried to bring it down. That she'd later helped save the city apparently wasn't nearly as sexy a memory, and people seemed to have forgotten it. Lulu had her own guilt about what her mother had done, and it hadn't helped that she'd been teased and bullied by humans as a kid. They'd called her mother the devil or worse, and Lulu had wanted nothing more than distance from the magical. "Dad is still bitching about all the weirdos," she said, "which makes me wonder why he agreed to move to Portland in the first place. Probably at least in part so he'd have something to bitch about. Mom's 100% in her element. She's teaching classes, hosting magic inns for Wiccans. I think it was a good change for them. She'd wanted to start over. Even years after, she felt like she couldn't move on in Chicago." I nodded. "Since I've been in Paris for 4 years, I can't really argue with that." She snorted a laugh, glanced back at me. "For two people with pretty good childhoods, we're pretty screwed up about it." I couldn't argue with that either. "How's the mayor of Vampireville?" she asked. That's what she called my father. "Diplomatic, as always. And Mom's good, although I think she misses yours." "BFFs," she said with a shrug, as if that explained everything. "You been to the house yet?" "Not yet," I said. "Diplomatic responsibilities. I'm going over there tonight for the Cadogan house party." And I declined the monster's invitation to dwell on that a little. "Oh, right. I got an invite to that." She grimaced. "I wasn't going to go. That cool with you? You like people a lot more than me anyway." I smiled. "Your call. I'd love to wine and dine you on my parents' dime, but it's going to be fancy, and it's going to be vampires. You had me at wining and dining, but lost me at fancy." She bobbed her head toward the mural. "The pack wants this done by the end of next week, so I think I'm going to put in a late night. Speaking of which, have you said hi to Connor yet?" "I saw him at the reception. Looked older, acted pretty much the same." And my dry tone should have indicated I wasn't impressed with that. "You punch him?" "Not yet." "Good. He's coming around, you know." I gave her a dour look. "What? He's had 4 years to mature, and has to mature if he wants the pack. There's a joke in there about animals being in charge, but I'm going to rise above it. I would like to talk to him, though." I hadn't planned on it, but since I was here, I wouldn't mind getting his take on the fairies. "Do you know if he's around?" "I don't, but you can look." She used the brush, gestured to a door on the opposite side of the room. "If he's in the building, he's in the bar or the garage. Through that door." "Okay," I said. "Maybe I'll see you tomorrow?" "I'll check my schedule," she said. "Have my people call your people." Then she turned back to her mural. "And Lise?" she called out when I was halfway to the door. "Yeah?" "Be careful in there. It is a den of wolves, after all." The bar portion of Little Red had been a dive, with dirty linoleum, gritty walls, and sticky, mismatched tables. The new version worked very hard to pull off the same level of comfortable grunge, and did a pretty good job of it. The room was big, with concrete floors and brick walls. There was a stage on one end, an empty space in the floor for dancing or fighting, and a lot of mismatched tables and chairs. The shifters watched as I walked through,
eyes turning to me. Low growls and grunts mixed with the magic in the air.
They shouldn't have minded having a vampire in their territory, much less one who'd been raised with their crown prince. But none of these shifters looked familiar. Maybe the pack had been recruiting.
"I'm looking for Connor," I said, and waited for someone to acknowledge me. Two of them, big men with broad shoulders and leather jackets, like walking shifter stereotypes, rose and walked toward me.
"Why you want him?"
"I need to talk to him."
"We don't like vampires in our place."
"I'm sorry to hear that, but this is a public place, so I can't help you." One of them growled, began flexing his fingers. The other cracked his neck. I figured they were bluffing. Even if they didn't know who I was, surely they were smart enough not to start a fight with a random vampire. But I wasn't entirely certain. I was certain that shifters didn't much care for sups who cowered, so I amped up the bravado. "I didn't come here looking for trouble," I said, "but I had to pass up a fight earlier, and I'd be happy to take one on now." A woman walked into the bar, from a door on the other side. I guessed she was about my age. Light brown skin and a scattering of freckles across her nose. Dark eyes topped by thick lashes and brows, and a generous mouth. Her hair was a dark cap of soft, loose waves. She was petite, noticeably smaller than most of the men in the room, but her body was athletic, strong. She wore jeans and a tank top, a bundle of thin necklaces shimmering around her neck, and plenty of magic buzzed around her.
"Who's this, Jax?"
she asked, striding toward us. Her energy was different from that of the other shifters in the room, the vibration faster, like someone had plucked a different string on a violin.
"Vampire," Jax said.
"Vampire," she said, looking me over. "Elisa Sullivan, I recognize your face. I don't recognize yours.
Miranda, North American Central Pack. I work for Gabriel. You don't."
"No, I don't. I'm here to see Connor." Emotion flashed across her face, but she hid it away again before I could guess what it meant.
"Why?"
"For reasons I'd like to discuss with him." She took a step forward, and the fingers on my arm tightened.
"You aren't in charge here."
"I didn't suggest otherwise, but I doubt you are either. Do you want to tell Connor I'm here, or should we just start fighting and I can apologize to him later?" I might have needed the bravado to get past the shifters, but beyond that, I really didn't like bullies. Standing up to them was one of my particular joys.
"Vampires don't own Chicago," Miranda said. "You can't just walk into our place, expect to take control."
"I don't know." I looked at each of them. "Seems like this place could use a vampire. Maybe a class on etiquette and manners."
"Bitch. Vampire," I reminded her. "So, yeah."
"What the hell's going on in here?"
I knew it was Connor before I turned around, not just from the sound of his voice, but from the aura of scent and magic that sliced through the air and left behind a charge of its own. It commanded. It was impressive, and another surprising change for the Prince of Wolves. I glanced back. Betraying nothing, Connor met my gaze.
"A little out of your territory, aren't you?"
he asked.
"I'm here to see Lulu, and while I was here, I had a few questions for you. You want to explain why these guys attempted to manhandle me?"
Connor's expression didn't change.
"Attempted?"
I smiled slyly. "I'm better than I was."
"She was sniffing around,"
said the taller one, stepping forward beside me. "I'm not a dog," I said with a brittle smile, my gaze on Connor. "I don't sniff.
So, you're just here to cause trouble, dead girl?
The challenge in his eyes was marked by a glint of humor, and I guess the performance wasn't for me, but for the shifters around us. No problem. I knew my part. I'm not dead.
You sure about that?
He took a step closer.
You seem pretty frosty to me.
Frosty was one of the adjectives the media had liked to use about vampires generally, and about me specifically. I was pale and blonde and careful, not the wild child they expected of young supernaturals, like Connor Keane. The shifters snickered, and I let my eyes silver, took a step forward that had them reaching for weapons to protect the Crown Prince. I looked around the room, counted. I mean, 10-to-1 odds aren't great, but I'm willing to slow things down, give you a fighting chance. Connor stepped forward, took my arm just above the elbow, and before I could argue, pulled me through the room to a door at the other end, then looked back at the shifters.
You hear any screaming, ignore it.
Then he shut the door. 7. We stood in a garage with flecked gray doors and towering ceilings, the walls covered in ancient Triumph and Harley signs. A muscle car was parked in one corner, and several motorcycles were parked here and there, including a beast of a low bike in matte black and gray. I gestured to the closed door. What was that all about?
A little performance for Miranda. She's one of the gunners.
For your dad's spot? Being the son of the Apex made Connor the most likely candidate to lead the pack when Gabriel decided to turn over the reins, but it didn't guarantee him the position. Still, I hadn't given much thought to his competitors. Connor nodded.
She likes to throw her weight around. She's a mountain lion, comes from a family that's opposed to the mixing of the species.
That explained the unusual magic. She is not charming.
They lived alone for a very long time. Miranda and her brothers are the first to live in Chicago, participate in pack activities.
And how do you feel about having competition?
The pack will do what the pack will do.
He crossed his arms.
Sounds like nonsense, but it's the truth. Doesn't matter how strong, smart, brave, capable an alpha is. What matters is what the pack says. Miranda and those like her are looking to prove themselves. And there are others who want to befriend the potentials with wine, women, and song. That's the pack way. Part hazing, part ass-kissing, part the promise of things to come.
You poor thing.
I love women and songs, but not when they feel obliged, or when they're trying to prove a point, or when they're trying to make a score. I don't play that way.
He gestured to the matte black bike on the other side of the garage.
You mind? I'm trying to finish the carburetor.
Go ahead, I said, walking closer. She's gorgeous. I hadn't been a motorcycle person, had only ridden a couple of times with Riley, and he'd tried to terrify me on both trips. But there was no mistaking the appeal of this one. It looked powerful, intense, dangerous. It was a shadow, made for a man who could walk in darkness as easily as he could in light.
It's Thelma, Connor said behind me.
No way, I said and squinted at her. Thelma had been his 16th birthday present, a pile of rusted Harley bones spread on a blue tarp, and he'd been thrilled.
Way, he said with a Valley Girl accent. I've been working on her for the past 4 years.
You've been busy. I ran the tips of my fingers over the quilted black seat, the leather as buttery as leather could be. Looks like she's nearly done.
I'm close, he said, and glanced up at me. What brings you by?
I sat down on a nearby chrome stool with a padded red leather top. Connor picked up a hunk of metal from the counter along the wall, began to work its fittings with a cloth. I wanted to talk to you about the peace talks. His brows lifted.
You running security for Cadogan House now?
No, I said. I'm working for Maison Dumas. His gaze shot up.
You're what?
Mandatory service year. European vampires give a year of service to their houses.
You aren't a member of a European house.
I'm not, but Dumas housed me while I was in school, so I'm paying it back. He watched me for a moment, brows knit.
You're volunteering for a year? That's so unlike you, brat.
I will not let him rile me up. I told you a long time ago that I wasn't spoiled.
You did, Connor said with a sly smile. But this is the first time you've had the evidence to back it up.
You're hilarious.
That's what the ladies say.
I rolled my eyes. Shifters supposedly have the pulse of the supernatural community. Are there any rumblings about the fairies? Murmurs about something they're up to?
Rising fairy trouble?
He asked.
Aren't you the one with the sociology degree?
I was surprised he knew, and was flattered more than I'd have expected. Have you been following my academic career, puppy?
Word filters down, brat, he said,
frowning at some bit of grime he couldn't reach.
I haven't heard anything specific, because we have a policy of non-involvement. But there are some rumblings.
Of?
Unhappiness.
He unscrewed another part, cleaned that with a towel, screwed it back again.
Fear their magic is fading and they're powerless to stop it. Fear they'll end up like they were before, stuck in the tower.
That matched Yoon's thoughts. And what do you think they plan to do about that, based on what little you know because of that policy of non-involvement? He smirked at my dry tone.
You aren't any funnier than you were before you left.
Agree to disagree. Answer the question.
But you're just as bossy, he said. And I told you, it's just rumblings, feelings. I don't know anything about plans. If we'd known, we'd have told your father before things started.
What about Ruidon? He looked up.
What about him?
He seems intense. Connor didn't answer, just met my gaze evenly, waiting for me to say more. He approached me at the reception, after the parade.
He approached you? A bloodletter?
This time he wasn't being sarcastic, but seemed genuinely surprised. Yeah. Connor rose, put the towel on the counter, then looked back at me.
What did he want?
He asked me about how I'd managed to be born. I didn't get into the details.
That's weird.
It was. I shrugged. Riley stepped in, and Ruidon scurried off, which was fine by me. Connor snorted a laugh.
Riley can play the badass when he wants to. I don't know anything about Ruidon other than the fact that he's Claudia's consort.
Is he aiming for the throne? He lifted a shoulder.
Honestly, don't know. That must have been some conversation to get you this curious.
It's not him, I said. Or not just. Feeling suddenly impatient, I rose, walked to the counter, picked up a screwdriver, and tapped it against my palm. It's the fit they threw today. They decide there's this deep conspiracy against them, but we give them a meaningless prize and they're satisfied? As a strategy, it doesn't make much sense.
I'll grant you it's odd, but Claudia's crazy.
So I've heard. I put the tool down, leaned back against the counter, and crossed my arms. Maybe Connor was right and there was nothing to this beyond a fading queen's desire to matter, to have attention. That meant the talks would continue, the French delegation would be fine, and we might get peace in Paris.
Maybe I'm just on edge, I murmured. Shocking. You're usually so calm and relaxed.
Connor tilted his head at me.
Why are you asking me these questions? Why not talk to your parents?